Welcome to our 2025 One School, One Book, The Umbrella Maker's Son by Katrina Lino. Blander Wheel, Part 1. Oscar Buckle was running like his life depended on it, because his life did depend on it. What had only a moment ago been a tremendous but unmanageable amount of rain was now anything but manageable. It was now life-threatening. It was now the worst of the worst of the worst of rains. It was a blander wheel, a rain of epic monsoon-like proportions. Dangerous. Avoid at all costs. And everybody knew you didn't go outside in a blander wheel. So Oscar ran and ran. He ran as the skies darkened. He ran as great bolts of lightning shot across the sky. He ran as the clouds split open and dumped buckets of rain down over the earth. He ran as the ground beneath him began to shake and tremble with rain. Wait, wait, wait. Let's back up a little. I'm getting ahead of myself. There's some backstory we need to cover before the blander wheel. Just a thing or two to go over. Like, Oscar Buckle lived in a city called Rhone, in a country called Terra, on a planet called Erd, in a solar system called Virginia. In Rhone, it was always raining. And when it wasn't raining, it was about to rain. There were 47 different types of rain. Any two-year-old in Rhone could name all of them, for it was one of the first things children were taught. You don't go outside in a blander wheel. What a lovely wib we're having today. A gentle sprinkle, the nicest kind of rain, warm and welcome. It's a full spillin' outside, but I don't mind it at all. A steady shower. It was schlinking this morning. Just shy of a spillin', a modest but persistent rain. But I don't mind it at all. But it's a proper bliggart now. Quite a lot of rain, and particularly unexpected. Oscar Buckle's favourite type of rain was a gentle wib, the way it fell soundlessly from the sky, kissing against your skin as you stood in the street gazing up. But he also loved the more impressive displays, a catawail, a summer thunderstorm, for example, when the sky lit up with lightning and the thunder was so loud the windows rattled in their panes. And he also loved a warm and sunny genel, a rain that occurs on a bright blue day with not a cloud in the sky from which it might have fallen. Honestly, he loved most kinds of rain. You learned to love rain if you lived in Rhone, mostly because hating rain was sort of pointless. It would be like hating air, or hating trees, or hating mountains, or lakes, or the ground beneath your feet. It was just easier to embrace it. It was a constant presence in the city, and that was just how it was. Well, that was just how it was now. It hadn't always been like this. Although the weather in Rhone had usually tended toward the wet side, things had gotten particularly stormy in the past 10 years or so. For a while, meteorologists tried to explain it, but they couldn't. An underground tectonic shift, some of them claimed. A gravitational anomaly, others insisted. Honestly, we haven't the faintest idea, the more honest among them admitted. Eventually, they recommended that everybody just get used to it. And everybody did, for the most part. Buckle umbrellas. Because of all the rain, the most popular accessory in Rhone was, of course, an umbrella. Similarly, the most common footwear was a good, strong, sturdy pair of rubber-soled rain boots, and the most common coat was a rain jacket. Some people wore plastic hats over their hair, or wrapped their heads in a sort of thin rubber scarf called a flouse. Because you could get used to rain all you wanted, but most people agreed that it was still rather unpleasant to be wet. This was where Oscar Buckle differed from most people. Oscar never carried an umbrella. In a sea of black pointed domes, all jostling and fighting for airspace, he was a nimble darting body among them. His favourite shoes were a beat-up pair of sneakers with a hole in each big toe. His favourite jacket was no jacket, and he certainly didn't wear a plastic hat or a flouse to protect his reddish-brown hair and white freckled face. He thought those were ridiculous. It was more than a bit ironic, then, that Oscar's father was an umbrella maker. Buckle umbrellas were known citywide for being strong, reliable, and long-lasting. They were made of the highest quality materials, assembled by hand by Bilius Buckle, Oscar's father, and sold for anywhere from 40 to 100 skiffs apiece. The exchange rate of one skiff to $1 is confusing and varies greatly depending on what you're trying to buy. But for our purposes, let's say it's more or less 1-to-1. So, reliable, yes, but also quite expensive. Quality work takes time and costs money, Bilius Buckle used to say. He usually said this when someone stopped by Buckle Umbrella shop, took one look at a price tag, and left without buying anything. But if you made them just a little bit worse and sold them for just a little bit less, wouldn't we sell more? Oscar had once asked his father over dinner. Bilius had choked on a bite of soup, turned red in the face, and proceeded to lecture his son for the next hour about integrity and value and my very reputation as a craftsperson. Oscar hadn't brought it up again after that. Brawn umbrellas. But what could a person do if they weren't able to spend a sizable chunk of their paycheck on a buckle umbrella? Well, in Rhône, on every single street corner, at the intersection of every road, outside of every important building, whether north or south of the wall. The city of Rhône is shaped a little bit like a stocking, and this stocking is divided into two parts by the wall, which is 20 feet high and slices the city in half from east to west, just underneath the heel. Everything south of the wall is called the toe. You could find a person manning a little wheeled cart, and you could go up to this person and buy an umbrella for 2 skiffs. These umbrellas were made by machines in one of the factories in the toe. They were made with cheap materials and assembled haphazardly and quickly. They would last, if you were lucky, for exactly one afternoon before a strong gust of wind turned them inside out or tore a hole in the fabric or blew them out of your hand and into the murky depths of the grey sea. If you were not lucky, they would last you far less than that. They would get you a couple of city blocks from your office in Commerce City, which is north of the wall, to a restaurant where you were meeting an important client for lunch. The wastebaskets of Rhône were absolutely filled with these cheap umbrellas, stuffed with them. Because for a lot of people, it was just easier to spend 2 skiffs every few days than it was to spend 60 skiffs all at once. This was especially true in the alley, where folks often lived paycheck to paycheck and found it harder to save up for an expensive purchase. These cheap umbrellas were made by a company called Brawn Industries. They own the biggest and foulest factory among all the factories in Rhône. It vomited thick, toxic smoke that made the back of your throat itch and caused everything to smell like burning chemical soup. Brawn Industries had been making umbrellas for the past decade. In that time, they had caused almost every other umbrella maker in the city of Rhône to go out of business. Almost. Buckle umbrellas still hung in there. Although what had once been a booming business for Bilius Buckle was now a scramble to pay rent at the beginning of every month. Sometimes Oscar thought the struggle of keeping a small business afloat wasn't worth the headache at the end of the month when Bilius sat down to narrowly pay the bills. Sometimes Oscar thought Bilius should just admit defeat and take a job at Brawn Industries. And sometimes, a lot of the time, Oscar wanted to collect every single umbrella in the entire city, Brawn and Buckle, and throw them all into the grey sea. Blanderwheel Part 2. He ran as the ground beneath him began to shake and tremble with violent quakes and jolts. The lighthouse must be close now, and he knew he had to reach it, or else he'd be swept into the grey sea, carried away by the rising waves that were crashing viciously across the small island. Could an entire island flood? Would the lighthouse and Oscar and this tiny outcrop of land end up at the bottom of the sea? As he continued to run, he thought he heard a voice screaming on the wind, but then he realized it was him. It was his voice. He was screaming. And even as he realized that, the wild wail of the wind stole his voice away. Suddenly he could hear nothing except the white noise of the storm, and then everything went black. East Market. I'm rushing the story. I keep doing that. Let's rewind a bit, just a few short weeks, to a nice calm Tuesday afternoon around 3 o'clock. We'll get to the Blanderwheel in due time. For now, here is Oscar heading to East Market, one of his favourite places in the entire world. Oscar loved navigating the long skinny aisles and cramped packed stalls of the outdoor market, searching for a barrel of glamps, a root vegetable similar to a potato, or a bushel of olens, a root vegetable similar to an onion, or the rarer svin, a root vegetable similar to honestly nothing we have in our world. I can only say that it is versatile and yummy, and a little bit goes a long way. Which was Oscar and Bilius's favourite treat, but sadly not often available and rather pricey when it was. He loved the sea of overlarge black umbrellas that hung over the entirety of the market, keeping the rain out, and a long time ago keeping the sun out as well. These umbrellas were made by none other than Bilius himself and had hung over East Market for almost 20 years now, which is a testament to the durability of the buckle umbrella. And he loved Tuesdays at the market most of all, because Tuesdays were when Necco, one of Oscar's closest friends and the owner of the best stall at the market, received fresh shipments of fruit from all over Terra. Oscar beelined toward Necco's stall right now, weaving his way in between shoppers and merchants and ducking under ropes of garlic and jumping over crates of glamps. To Oscar's right was the wall. Oscar waved at a pair of guards who were currently stationed at the east door. The wall has 3 doors total, and these are manned by guards at all hours of the day and night. While theoretically a resident of the Toe could pass freely through them at any time, these guards are known to turn people away for any number of reasons. They did not wave back. Through the east door, Oscar glimpsed Central Market. Like most things north of the wall, Central Market was bigger, cleaner, and nicer, but Neko was from the Toe, so he always made sure to save some of his rarer treats for East Market. He set the prices in East Market lower too, so the people of the alley could eat the same sweet, juicy fruit as the people from Rome Piers, a very fancy, rich neighborhood north of the wall. Oscar heard Neko's booming laugh before he saw him. Neko was a big man, at least 7 feet tall, with tan skin, a barrel-shaped body, and hands the size of encyclopedias. He was always happy, always laughing, and always overjoyed to see Oscar. Today was no exception. As soon as Oscar popped into view, Neko beamed and tossed him a small, bright yellow object. Oscar caught it and yelped in surprise. It was burning hot! Shooting star fruit! A wonderfully rare sweet fruit that is a bit like a lemon mixed with a mango, with a smoky aftertaste. Neko said, cackling with laughter. Super fresh! Oscar tossed the fruit back and forth between his hands, trying to cool it down a bit. Is this edible? Of course it is, Neko responded, still laughing. Make a wish and blow. So Oscar thought for a moment, made a wish. He wished he'd find a Svin to bring home for dinner. Then blew on the fruit. It cooled instantly. He took a cautious bite. Tastes a little burnt, he said. Neko made a face, then whisked the rest of the fruit out of Oscar's hand. No appreciation for the finer things in life, Neko mumbled. He popped the fruit into his mouth and made a loud sound of contentment. Do you have any apples? Oscar asked, hopefully. I like apples. Yes, yes, I have your boring apples. Although Neko pretended to be grumpy, he was smiling as he dropped two apples into Oscar's canvas tote. He looked around his stall, grabbed two midnight oranges. These taste like a cross between an orange and a blueberry and are the color of the sky at, you guessed it, midnight. And drop them in too. For your father, he said with a wink. Thanks, Neko. And do you have anything for me? Neko asked. You're overdue, you know. Oscar never paid at Neko's fruit stand. He traded. You see, Oscar was a wood carver. He had been carving animals and other objects, like mugs and plates and paperweights and candle holders and flock pieces. More on flock later. Out of wood for as long as he could remember. He smiled sheepishly now as he slid a hand into his pocket. He rummaged around and then withdrew something small. It was a delicate wood carving of a bird, no more than 4 inches long. Its wings outstretched, captured in mid-flight, its beak sharp and pointed, its eyes watchful and piercing. Oscar held the carving out to Neko, who turned it over in his hand, studying it. Oscar practically wiggled with anxiety. He rarely showed his carvings to anyone, just Neko, Bilius, and his best friend, Sage Cleverer. Neko let out a long, low whistle. Oscar, he said, this is incredible. Oh, I don't know, Oscar said. Compliments made him feel a little squirmy, and he shifted his weight from foot to foot as Neko continued examining the bird. Your talent is growing, my small friend, Neko said. The detail here, in the feathers, in the face, the eyes are so expressive. Remember the last one you gave me, the tiger, a few months ago? I can see improvements even from that. Thanks, Neko, Oscar mumbled. This certainly deserves a few more of these, Neko said, and tossed two more apples into Oscar's bag. Now, get going. Your dad'll be wondering where you are. Oscar smiled and waved goodbye, and then, his bag laden with apples and midnight oranges, he continued down the skinny aisles of East Market. And sure enough, he found two Svins for dinner. Chateau Buckle. Oscar and his father lovingly referred to their alley apartment as Chateau Buckle. Chateau is French for castle. There are indeed people in Oscar's world who speak French in a tiny country to the northeast of Rhone called not France, but France. Long story. They do have an Eiffel Tower there, and it's pretty similar to our world's Eiffel Tower, except it's 3 feet shorter and bright blue. As far as apartments went, it was warm and cozy and safe and clean and cluttered, and according to the two of them, absolutely perfect in every way. It had two floors. On the first floor was the kitchen and living room, a small bathroom, and a curtained-off space where Bilius slept. The second floor was much smaller and consisted only of Oscar's bedroom and another bathroom with a big bathtub and shower. Chateau Buckle was located in Building 4 of the 13 apartment buildings that made up the alley, and colloquially, among its tenants was called Dove. All the buildings were named after birds. Sage, who lived just across the way with her mother, father, and baby brother, lived in Woodpecker. Everyone just thought it was nicer to call the buildings names like Dove and Woodpecker, as opposed to Building 4 and Building 5. Oscar and his father usually arrived home around the same time. Billy has spent most of his days in the Buckle Umbrella's storefront and workshop, which was located in the middle of the 13 apartment buildings, in a small arrangement of shops where the people of the alley bought their clothes and their books and their shoes, and yes, their umbrellas. If it was a good day, Bilius had managed to sell one umbrella. If it was a very good day, he'd sold two. If it was an extraordinary day, he'd sold three to rich people who came down from Rowan Piers to buy something fancy and expensive to impress their neighbours. But if it was a bad day, he'd sold none at all. Today was a bad day. When Oscar got home, he found Bilius sitting on the floor in the living room, his shoes still on, his coat still on, his umbrella still open by the door. Bilius had his face in his hands, but when he heard the door open, he looked up quickly, trying to shake the darkness from his eyes, smiling for his son. "Oscar," he said, "I was just resting." "On the floor?" "Long day." "Any sales?" Oscar asked, even though he already knew the answer. There hadn't been a sale for 9 days now. "It's a lull," Bilius said. "It's been whipping for days. People only buy umbrellas when it's really coming down." "Look what I got," Oscar said, trying to improve the mood. He took the fins from his tote. "I'll cook a fin casserole tonight, okay, Dad?" "Oh, Oscar, that sounds lovely," Bilius said. "That sounds like exactly what I need." "Why don't you head upstairs and get showered, and I'll start cooking," Oscar suggested. He held out his hand and helped Bilius to his feet. "You're too good to me," Bilius said, ruffling Oscar's hair. He kicked off his shoes and headed upstairs. Oscar went to the kitchen, dropping his tote on the round table and washing his hands in the sink. The kitchen window looked out to the east, and he could see Woodpecker and Sage's kitchen window, and above that, Sage's bedroom. It was dark now. Sage took piano lessons after school, and her parents both worked late. It was one of the things they bonded over when they'd first become friends. Their bedroom windows faced each other. They did Morse code with flashlights and had once attempted a string and can telephone. It had worked for a few weeks until a particularly bad trank lumpet, a rain characterized by its sudden burst of downpour lasting a few seconds at a time, creating a distinctive pulsating effect, had knocked the whole thing down. Oscar washed the fins, and then he got a cutting board and sliced them into thin, perfect ovals. He found a can of crushed tomatoes and lined the casserole dish with them, then added a layer of fins and a layer of cheese. He popped the casserole into the oven and set a timer for 1 hour. And then, because they had enough flour for it, he made two individually sized loaves of quick bread. It is what it sounds like, quick bread, and slid them in next to the casserole. Oscar looked out the window again. The cleverer's apartment was still dark, and the rain had increased from a whip to a plinker, a very ticklish kind of rain that slithers down the back of your collar and crawls into the cuffs of your socks, falling just slightly more heavily now. Oscar was glad he was inside. If he had a least favourite type of rain, it was the creeping, tickly, skin-crawly drops of a plinker. If he craned his neck and looked upward, Oscar could just about see a sliver of sky between the two apartment buildings. As usual, it was grey, smoky, cloudy, and generally miserable. Oscar couldn't remember the last time he'd seen the sun, which feels like a good time to discuss a brief history of weather patterns. As I've mentioned, it wasn't always like this. When Oscar was a baby, when his mother and father had been a young couple, they'd taken him to the beach, to the park, on long promenades around the city. There were pictures of the three of them, the sky blue and cloudless above, the sun a bright yellow spot high above them. But then, just about 10 years ago, everything changed. Of course, it had always been rainy in Roan, but now there was nothing else. Now it was only rain. Gone were the days of genels and emeralds, summer showers that begin and end with a brilliant double rainbow. Now the sun was a distant memory, and the smoke from the factories blotted out any scrap of blue sky that might have been left. Now it was only rain and only smog and only ever an endless expanse of grey. And now, where the grey sea met the grey sky, you could barely tell the difference.